We are mostly live and completely local. This is Metro South Podcasting.
Welcome to the Big Show with Ron Van Dam. Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us and how it affects us here on the South Shore of Massachusetts. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. Pleasure to be with you on this fine, wonderful, beautiful day. How you doing? Good to see you. My name is Ron Van Dam. I was named that after the famous artist Bucky Sherwood. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Hey, right now. It's Thursday, August something. August 21st, 2014. Good to be with you. This is a POD cast. I guess there's a musical group called POD. It has nothing to do with that. I just don't like to say pod, as you know. I feel stupid saying pod. A guy like me should not be saying pod to other people. It's just stupid. Although we all say stupid things. We walk around and call each other stupid things and say stupid things. We say to people, we're going to go find out about that. We're going to Google it, which is the sound that a baby makes when a baby cries or snot's coming from its nose or drool is cascading down its chin. It's Googling. Also, apparently, it's getting information on the internet, on the superhighway of international fun and prizes. I don't know. Or we probably have an email address with Yahoo, which is a sound that a drunken cowboy makes. I don't know what happened to us. I really don't know what happened to our society. Of course, Yahoo isn't the only strange search engine sounding name. Sometimes we'll search for things on Bing, which is the sound that a bell makes, or when you snap somebody's underwear, or the sound that a doorbell makes. It's half of what a doorbell sound makes. The other half would be bong. Bing, bong. So, I mean, we're just like, and then we take pictures of ourselves. We call it selfies. That's also something that a grown person sounds funny saying. It's a selfie. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. I find it all bizarre. Went to restaurant yesterday. Actually, I went to one of those sub places, not the one with the one that ends in way, Subway, which is confusing, whatever, because in New York, you know, they actually have a Subway. In Boston, they have a Subway, too. They don't call it that. They call it the train. In New York, they call it Subway, and what if you had a Subway sub shop in the Subway in New York? You'd be going to the Subway to get Subway. Or if you say to somebody, I'm going to the Subway, they don't know if you're going in New York, or they don't know if you're going on the train, or you're going to have some cold cuts. They don't know what you're doing. Subway was involved in some type of a interesting social commentary where they had a certain ingredient in their bread, some chemical in their bread, which apparently people didn't like. They don't want chemicals put in their bread, apparently. I don't know if it was a preservative or what, or it was meant to make you confess about your ill ways. I don't know why they put the thing in there, and I don't know what it was called, and it really doesn't matter. But Subway was called out on the carpet about the chemical they were putting in their bread. I don't know if it made it tastier or what. And so a lot of people started backing off of Subway, kind of like a market basket thing. Like, ooh, I'm not going to eat that bread when I go somewhere else and have bread that is purely natural. And then, of course, all the other sub places started advertising, our bread doesn't have that sodium, mosium, shoveling, flugling, and snimmo, some of that. We don't have that in our bread. So people said, oh, something wrong with Subway, huh? And then they stopped putting the chemical in their bread at Subway, and everybody just forgot about it, that they were trying to kill us. Actually, it wasn't necessarily dangerous. It's just, who wants chemicals put into their bread?
I do.
Subway's a fine place. I go to Subway every once in a while. I mean, the sandwich shop, not the train. I won't go on a Subway train, I really. Because they have something on Subway trains that I don't really like. And that's, what's the phrase? People. That's what it is. People. Because people, when they're in a Subway station or on a Subway train, they somehow... I just picture all of them at some point have urinated in the station. And I know nobody has, except for a couple of bums who had nothing else to do. And I use the term loosely, bums. But there are some people that urinate in the Subway. And I find that to be a little bit disgusting, although in other countries, it's perfectly fine. But I don't like that. And I can't picture myself holding a handrail going down to the Subway platform that thousands and millions of other people have touched, peed on, spermicided, spit on, touched with their ugly hands, which with they masturbated just half an hour earlier. Yuck. Or even had a Subway sandwich. It's just, I don't want to touch any of that. And I need that handrail to get down those stairs. Not really, but, you know, what the hell. And there's just so many of those damn things called people. They're just all over the place. And they bump into you and they touch you. And they ugh, yuck. I like people on a one-to-one basis sometimes. Where, hi, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? Fine. How are you? Fine. How are you? Fine. And then you just talk about yourselves and that stuff, and it's one-on-one, and I don't have to touch them necessarily, you know. But in a Subway, on a train platform, it's just, ew, it's just people oozing their liquids and yeesh. I exaggerate, I totally don't care, I just don't like Subways. I don't care how much people stink and smell, as long as I don't have to engage myself with them, I don't really care. I don't really hate people that much. I find them interesting. Sometimes I'll sit on a park bench and I'll just stare at them and wonder what they're doing and what their lives are like and where they've come from and where they're going. And it's very comforting to me because I don't have to care, so it's kind of like a game. He probably has only three toes. Look at that woman over there. Why is she with him? He probably doesn't have a penis. Look at that little girl over there. What a horrible life she must have. Or the opposite. Look at that happy couple. Oh, look at them. They're in love. They're so touchy-feely. Look at them. They're so happy. They have no idea what it's going to be like in 3 years. Oh, those poor, poor people in love. Welcome to My Cynical World, starring Ron Van Damme. I mean, a lot of this, I got to tell you something, kids. A lot of what I talk about here and what I'm talking about now, I don't really believe it myself. It just makes for a nice podcast, you know, makes for a nice radio show. So you say things are a little outlandish, don't make any sense. How can you be that way? How can you be so cynical? How can you be so sarcastic? How can you hate so many people? I really don't, somewhat. It's just entertainment. Have a great time, tip your waitresses and stuff, and everybody's going to be fine. So anyway, Subway, their slogan is "Eat Fresh," and I balk at that slogan because if you notice, they got people standing behind a counter with lettuce and all these accoutrements, cheeses, tomatoes, sometimes just chicken. Slices of chicken, all kinds of crap there in front of them so that they can put it on your sub as you request it. But how fresh is that stuff? Is there somebody in the back chopping up the olives? I don't think so. Is it coming out of a giant olive plastic container? Probably. I've never worked at Subway. I don't know. I'm just figuring that there is no sous chef in the back constantly making fresh vegetables. I don't think so. So, I mean, if they want to really use their slogan, eat fresh, make the damn subs in the back where I can't see you, because I'm just looking at vegetables sitting out all day in a fairly cooled environment, I suppose. I'm not putting Subway down. I mean, I could, because it's a podcast. There's no FCC requirements here. But you're not supposed to say bad things about companies that could affect their business. I don't think I'm going to affect their business. I can't imagine a sub shop, really, that I know of, although I'm sure there are some, where you order a sub and they say, all right, hold on, let me go back and slice up some olives. And here's a head of iceberg that I just picked from my garden in the back of the sub shop. Let me chop up that lettuce for you. Oh, you want roast beef? Hold on. Hey, slaughter Betsy, will you? Go get Betsy and slaughter her in the back, will you, please? I mean, stuff isn't fresh. I know that. And there's preservatives and all the cold cuts that they used. And I understand that, too. So I'm not getting down on Subway. It's just that your slogan is eat fresh. And I'm just saying, perhaps your slogan goes a little too far away from reality. It's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Now that he is finally free of the constraints of terrestrial radio and into the anything-goes atmosphere of the podcasting world, we can finally say that Ron Van Dam is one badass motherfucker. What was that? Okay, that's the way it's going to be? Great. Fuck you. You're listening to the fucking Ron Van Dam show on Metro South Podcasting. I didn't even say anything that time.
Well, that's radical. That's some radical stuff going on there. All right. So, I walk into, it wasn't a Subway yesterday. I actually walked into, I was on my way home from a thing, and I stopped off at a D'Angelo's, which is a sub shop. By the way, it's not D'Angelo's anymore. It's called D'Angelo's Grilled Sandwiches. Oh. Okay. You kind of took it a step higher, didn't you? So I go into D'Angelo's Grilled Sandwiches, and there's these young people, I can call them the fetus of life, working behind the counter, dressed in clothing of some sort. I really don't know what it was. Each one had a different version of the D'Angelo's grilled sandwiches shirt on. They were all like stupid little polo shirts that three-year-olds wear kind of stuff. Just kind of disgusting in itself. If you're going to handle my food, you gotta look somewhat decent. You can't be a slobbering jackass. You can't have your hair like in your nose and stuff. As much as I don't mind hair in the nose, when you're preparing food, whatever. I don't want crap coming out of your nose when I'm asking for pickles on my sub. Do you know what I'm saying? So, anyway, I go in there, and there's someone in front of me, and it's a guy, and he's ordering. And all of a sudden, because I am so weird and so picky-oon and so mind-blowingly analytical, I guess that's why I do this thing. I started to listen to the way that people order their food. And it's a whole subculture that I never realized before, the various methods of ordering food. So this girl behind the counter, she says, "Can I help you?" And the inference there is, "Can I take your order?" The general term, "Can I help you?" Just opens the door for too much. "Can I help you?" "Yes. My house has not been painted in 10 years. Would you hold the ladder for me?" Of course, that's not what you say to a person working at a D'Angelo Subs. I'm sorry, grilled sandwich place. No, the correct phrase should be, can I take your order? Not can I help you, but I mean, I don't need help. I mean, I could literally go back there, lady, and make my own sandwich. As a matter of fact, that ain't a bad idea. Get out of the way. Hand me the spatula. I'm going to town. Watch those mayonnaise fly. So, but she says, I'm going to help you. And the guy says, and he's looking at the sandwich menu there, of which there are just so many variations of chicken and steak and cold cuts. And the guy says, I'll try the roast beef. And here you go. Here you go. I can't just take that at face value because people say that. I'll try the roast beef. Technically, the lady should go in the back, get the slicer. Actually, they don't slice. They actually have all the meat already cut up in little plastic balls. Yeah. Sounds tasty, doesn't it? I'll take that little plastic ball of meat, please. She should technically take out a slab of sliced roast beef, bring it to the counter, and say to the guy, okay, here it is, try it. Because you're not trying it. Once they give you the sandwich, it's yours, man. You're not all right, thank you for the roast beef sub. Let me try it. Not really what I really wanted. Let me try the meatball, please. All right, I'll be right back. And she puts together the meatball thing. And how do you want cheese on it? Provolone, please. I'll try the provolone. Oh, okay, fine. And here's your sub. Thank you. I'm trying it, and I don't really like it. I'll try the lobster. Get out of here. Get out of here. You don't order things and say, I'll try them. My grandfather did that. My grandfather used to take us to really nice restaurants in New York when I was growing up. And that was his thing. Every Sunday or Saturday, he would take us to a nice restaurant. He had some bucks. And he was the most gentle, wonderful guy in the world, my grandfather. At least the way I remember him. In actuality, that may not have been his personality, but to me, the grandkid, I thought he was just a real sweetheart. I've since learned through relatives that was not necessarily the case. But I prefer my impressions in my mind to be the lasting. So I go with that. So he would be in a restaurant, and he wasn't a demanding man, but I don't think he understood the rules of etiquette too well. And he would order, and this would be ritzy restaurants, you know, where even back then, the food was like $20 a piece, a plate, whatever. And the waitress would come over and say, "Can I help you?" And he would say, "Yeah, I'll try the filet mignon, please."
All right.
That would be the term he used. And to be honest with you, when I was a kid, I didn't really pick up on that. But as an adult, it's like, I'll try it? That's not really what's happening here. He would actually, it's embarrassing to me. Although, on one hand, I don't care. And on the other hand, it was embarrassing. I don't know where I am right now with that feeling. He would get up from the table and he would walk over to somebody else's table about three tables away, because he would see the waitress or the waiter bring them their meal, and my grandfather would kind of see the food on the plate on the tray that the waiter was carrying, and this would somehow lure him into wanting that. He didn't know what it was, but it looked good seeing a guy carrying it on a tray. So he would get up from our table and walk about 2, 3, 4 tables away to where this food was just delivered. And he would say, "Excuse me, what exactly is that?" And out of, I don't know, embarrassment or fear, the couple would say, "Oh, this is the roast turkey." Huh. looks good. Thank you. And then he'd go back to the table and he would actually order the roast turkey. The man had to, I guess, literally try with his eyes. I guess that's really what he did. So that was a bit annoying. He would also call all the female waitresses dear. Now, dear's better than honey. Dear's a familiar term that we use in writing letters, even if we don't know the person. Dear Mr. Anderson, I don't know if you're a dear. It's just the way you address things. I don't want to have sex with you, Mr. Anderson. I'm just addressing you. It's very familiar. So I guess it wasn't so bad with the dear thing. I know many people that call the waitstaff honey. But the waitstaff these days, if you've noticed, has kind of turned things around on the customer where the waitstaff will call the customers honey. They'll call the females honey and they'll call the males honey. They become quite familiar. To me, when you call somebody honey, you've either had sex with them or really want to or just about to. It's a real term of endearment. It's not a casual term such as dear Mr. Anderson. You don't address letters Mr. Anderson, comma honey. You don't do that. So it's a little bit more of a familiar situation, and yet I find that waitresses are doing that. When a waiter does it, I'm not so sure, but you know, I'm finding that. And of course, that is like prostituting tips. It really is. And do you ever get a check after your meal? Well, I think you always get a check after your meal if you're in a restaurant. Do you ever get a check after your meal? Well, sometimes, Ron. Sometimes I just don't pay for it. And on the check, there it says, thank you, comma, the waitress's name, which I guess is okay, and waiters do it too. But then after that, there's some type of a symbol. Usually, it's what they call, in the Southern Hemisphere, they call it a smiley face. It's a little circle, two eyes, and a real happy upturned U, which is the mouth, and it's the smiley face. And that means I am so freaking happy because you're supposed to tip me a lot of money. Some people will actually draw a flower or perhaps a seascape or one of those bucolic scenes with a cabin in the background and a horse in the foreground. Sometimes I get very creative. But of course, the more familiar the greeting or the goodbye on a check, the more you're supposed to feel like, oh, this waitress, she really, really, really likes me. I'm coming back tomorrow. Wonder what kind of picture I'm going to get on my check tomorrow. And of course, every guy is just waiting for a phone number or email address or something like that. That never happens. You don't get a girl's address or phone number because you ordered a steak sub. It just doesn't work like that. In this country, at least. Strange things that go on in restaurants, yeah. I've been to breakfast places, and this is for breakfast, ladies and gentlemen, where I'll be sitting at the table, and the waitress comes over, really happy, really chipper. This is like 7 in the morning. Usually people aren't that happy at 7 in the morning. They're just realizing that they've gotten up and are totally dressed and are working. That should be like a constant revelation in the morning. I mean, people should be walking around going, whoa. Whoa, where am I? What? I'm walking. My God, I'm walking. They should be like amazed that they're anywhere. So this waitress comes over. This has happened more than once in more than one restaurants. And usually they'll stand at the end of the table and say, can I take your order? To which the proper response, by the way, is yes, you can. And then she should say something else. Instead, we just order. But that wasn't the question. The question was, can I take your order? And the proper answer to that is, yes, you can. Unless you don't allow them to, then the answer would be, no, You can't take my order. What are you, serious? You can't take my order. Anyway, so she stands there and she says, can I take your order? And I say, I'm ready to order. Oh, I'm ready to order. I'm loaded for ordering. This is what she does, kids. She takes her butt and she sits down right next to me. I mean, like, almost on me, almost on my lap. Most guys don't complain about something like that, but at 7 in the morning, it's like, oh, okay, this might be a tad disingenuous. If it was 2 o'clock in the morning in a bar and people were going home and they were single and they didn't want to go home alone, I could see that. 7 o'clock in the morning in a breakfast place sitting on my lap, disingenuous. So she sits right next to me as if she's my date, and she says, what would you like? Well, there are so many answers to that question, but not at 7 in the morning. So I tell her how I'd like my eggs, and it just starts going downhill from there, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, how many ways are there to have your eggs? Let's count them. Scrambled, which is probably the most popular because they're easy to pick up. They're not sloppy. If I'm with somebody having breakfast, I consider the slop factor. Eggs are a very disgusting thing to eat. They are loose, droopy, yucky, plasmatic, embryonish types of food substances, food stuff, we call them. So I go for the scrambled in mixed company because scrambled gives it some substance. You can pick it up with a fork. It doesn't look like this is something that somebody already ate. Sometimes it does. The other option, of course, is dropped eggs. And I still don't know what that is because I'm not from this area. I'm from New York, and we didn't drop our eggs there. A dropped egg, I'm not sure. I believe it's a sunny side up, is that correct? And sunny side would mean that the egg yolk would resemble the sun on a really beautiful day, and the egg white surrounding it would be clouds. I'm not too sure about that. I don't know how that works. But if you see the yellow of the yolk, that's either called sunny side up, is what we call it in New York. I think here you call it dropped. I don't know what the fuck drop means. To me, dropped egg is like a klutzy chef dropping eggs in the background. Hey, what's all that noise in the back? Chef's dropping your eggs all over the place. That's what you wanted, isn't it? Then there's poached, which really, if done right, can be quite amazing. They're little steam balls of egg. It's loose inside, but not when you... It doesn't... It's like a volcano. It doesn't erupt. It's egg lava until you cut into it. It can be masterfully done. And then there's the old omelet, which is nothing but scrambled without all that scrambling going on. If you don't scramble an egg, you're going to get an omelet. And omelets are fun because you can just put about anything you want in an omelet. I actually, with my leftover Chinese food, I will put that in a pan in the morning, and then I will, do the egg thing, beat the egg to a pulp, and then I'll pour that over whatever the Chinese food is. It really doesn't matter. And then I got an omelet, man, and it's tasty no matter what it is. I mean, you can put anything inside an omelet, and you're pretty much going to say, hey, this is interesting. You'll always say that. You'll always say, hey, this is interesting. So, when David Casella was on the show a couple of years ago, we discussed this. David used to work in a kitchen. I worked in a kitchen as well for a short period of time. But Dave and I were talking, and... I was saying, David, what do you do if you're in a nice fancy restaurant and your food comes and it's like not cooked properly or it doesn't taste right? What do you do? And my thoughts would be you send it back. You call the wait staff over and you say, I'm sorry, but this doesn't taste right. And they say, I'm sorry, Mr. Vendor. And they go back into the kitchen. David says, don't do that. He says, never do that. I said, why? He said, well, if you do that, sometimes the kitchen staff gets very spiteful that you didn't like their food or that you complained about it. And they'll heat it up or they'll correct it, but they'll add their own flavoring to it. And I said to him, their own flavoring, kind of understanding where he's going with that, but couldn't just leave it there. He said, yeah, their own flavoring. He said, sometimes they'll spit in it or they'll make it dirty, baby, and you'll never know. I said, well, how often does that happen? He says, oh, not often, but he's seen it happen working in the kitchens, and it does happen, and you'll never know it, and you'll never taste it. I said, oh, so then what would you do, David? He said, I would just not eat it, leave it there. That way they can't really bill you for it because you didn't eat it. And when they come over and say, I'm sorry, sir, is everything okay? You're not eating your dinner. You say, this is not good. We'll heat it right up. We'll take care of that. We'll get you another one. Would you like something else? And what you're supposed to say is, no, I'm just not going to eat. And then you won't be charged for it, and you won't be spit in it. I said, but David, you're out with other people. They're going to eat, and it's going to ruin the entire dinner. He didn't really answer that. I think what he was intimating was, when you're by yourself, don't eat it. Don't have them reorder it. Just say, I'm not going to be eating this, and just pay for your water or your salad or whatever you had and leave and go somewhere else. It makes it difficult in a, I've been out with other couples before, you know, two couples, me couple and some other couple, and the food comes out sporadically. All four meals are supposed to come out at the same time, but it doesn't. This has happened to me frequently at Mexican restaurants for some reason. I don't know why. Because in my mind, there's no variation in food in a Mexican restaurant. You can have pork, chicken, or ground beef, and that's pretty much fucking it. I mean, it's everything comes with rice or with refried beans, or what I call, someone ate the beans before you, beans. It's all the same. It's why can't you make up 3,000 dishes with all that same crap on it? The only variation whatsoever is what type of container you put it in. A burrito, a taco, a tamale, an enchilada. It's all the same fucking thing. It's just a question of how big the thing is and how you roll it. Oh, that's how I roll it. Mexican food is there's some great variations, but it's all exactly the same. And every time you walk in, what do? You sit down, they come out with this big bowl of, looks like Doritos or something, a big bowl of, you know, that stuff, tortilla, chips, whatever the hell that stuff is. What do you call that stuff? Yeah, whatever. And a big bowl of salsa. Sometimes it's big, sometimes it isn't. And you can sit there all day and eat like 5 pounds of that stuff if you want to. They'll just keep bringing it to you because they know eventually it's going to kill you. It's all the same. I think it's the cuisine with the least variation and the greatest disguise for being variable, but it's not. And the reason is they get you shit-faced on the margaritas before anything happens anyway. So no matter how bad the food is, no matter how similar it is to the other dish, you don't really care at that point because you've had two or three of these margaritas, and they're always like priced really low, so you have 10,000 of them. That's why the food doesn't come out right away. It's because you have to have 16 margaritas first, otherwise you'll find them out. You'll say, hey, wait a minute, this food's all the same. Not with 6 margaritas in it, it's not. But Mexican's a fun food. I don't know why. I have no idea. I really have no idea. It's just interesting the way that we order things. How? What phrase do you use when the waitress or the waiter comes over in a restaurant and says, "Are you ready? Can I take your order?" How do you phrase it? Think about that. How do you phrase it? Do you say, "I'll try the chicken"? Do you say, "I'll have the chicken"? Do you say, "I'm getting the chicken"? Do you say, "Would you bring me the chicken"? How do you order? Notice it next time. Notice how you say it. And listen around the room to the way other people phrase that desire to order. It's fascinating. Perhaps only in my world, but yet, it's fascinating.
Listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too. But sometimes he says bad words.
No, that's not true, kid. It's not true. Stop spreading that false information. It's the Ron Van Dam Show, heard here on a daily basis, Monday through Friday, no matter what, right here on the Ron Van Dam Show podcast channel. Metro South Podcasting. Make it a part of your daily routine at any time of the day that you so choose, because it's a podcast. It's not a live deal anymore. I did that for 23 years, and this is kind of more fun for me because I don't have to talk politics, which I really hate with a passion, but I did it with a big smile on my face because I'm a phony man. It was a job and stuff. It was a job. This, to me, isn't a job. This is like our friendship that we're developing between ourselves. How silly does that sound? But it's different. I can just talk about restaurants where if I were on the air, they, "Ron, talk about the violence in the city. Talk about that murder that took place. Talk about the..." I don't like that. I don't like that. I just like talking about stuff that we all go through and kind of open up our minds a little bit to the things that we do, why we do them, and get into the delicacies and intricacies of our lifestyles. I think that's kind of more fun. More thing. More fun. It was for me. I don't know. I'm not sure. One of my first jobs was in New York City. There was a football player called Joe Namath. Some of you may be familiar with him, some of you may not. He was with the New York Jets. He retired from football. And Joe Namath decided with his big football name to be an entrepreneur and to go into business. So he decided to open up a chain of hamburger places. And it was to be called Broadway Joe Namath. Because for some reason, and it escapes me as to why, his nickname was Broadway Joe Namath. I was a New York Jets football player. I have no idea how Broadway got into his name as a prefix, but it did. So what did he do? He opened up a hamburger place on Broadway in Times Square called Broadway Joe Namath's. As he opened up that location, he also was building and in the process of putting together five other Broadway Joe Namath's throughout New York City and northern New Jersey. I'm a guy without a job in New York. I'm a young guy. And I see an ad in the paper. No, I'm sorry. Actually, my stepmother, that's the mother on which you step, brought it to my attention because she knew I was looking for work and probably wanted to get me out of the house. I'm sorry, the apartment. And say, so she said, "Ron," she says, "look, there is an opening here at Broadway Joe Namath's." And I said, "Yes." because I never had cooked before at that juncture in my life, and I didn't. I had no work experience whatsoever. I think my only claim to fame was I was a hell of a masturbator. Oh, I was so good at it. But I didn't know how many other people were good at that as well. I had no concept. But anyway, that's besides the point. So anyway, that was the end of it. So, for some reason, I actually went down there and I applied. Now, I'm a very tall person. Usually the stuff that I try to do, I get away with because I'm tall. And I've been told all throughout my life to this very day that I'm very intimidating. And it's not necessarily because I don't smile a lot. I smile inside a lot, but perhaps not outside a lot, I've been told. I don't know. But I'm intimidating. I'm a tall man. And that usually works a lot better in business when you're tall than if you're more of the Napoleon type. Tall people are usually more laid back because they don't have to be in your face. They already are. Short people have what they call the Napoleonic complex, where their personality has to be so overdone because no one sees them unless they jump up and say, "I'm here. Excuse me. I'm here. You can't see me, but I'm significant." They have to go to great extents personality-wise to make up for their height. Tall people don't have to do that at all. Sometimes it's the opposite, where they're too tall and they wish that they could shrink. But I'm tall. I'm 6'3", and I'm tall. So I walked in there, and I also was a very dramatic kid. I was able to be dramatic. It was making me a dramatic kid, and I talked myself up really well. So I sat down, and they said, "Do you have any experience working in a hamburger place?" Said, Oh, yeah. Give me experience. Hamburger place? Yeah, I do. Yeah. Wait a minute. Did you say experience working in a hamburger? Yes, I do. Oh, a hamburger place? Yes, I do. All right. We'll start you tomorrow night. You come in at 7 o'clock, you do the night shift, and we'll see you then. What? So you're hired. We'll see you at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. We'll see you then. I'm what? I'm hired? Yeah. So I go home, and I tell my family that they're hired, and they go, "But you don't know how to cook." I know. So I go in the next night, and there it is. And in the back of my mind, I'm a little intimidated because it's a fast-paced, it's a fast food thing. It's like a McDonald's kind of thing. But I don't have to deal with the public because I'm working in the back, and they have these little chutes in the wall, these little openings in the wall with little metal chutes coming out of them. And you take the hamburgers off the grill, put them in a bun, wrap them up, and send them down the chute. And that's really all I had to do. And I didn't have to deal with the public. That would have been different, but I didn't see the public. If I looked through the hole in the wall down the chute, I might see a person's shoulder or something, but that's it. So I'm putting the stuff on the grill. I mean, it's not difficult, and I'm doing that. And I'm really not doing so bad there, and it's really not so bad. And there's two people in the back working with me. One of their name is Jesus, and I didn't know how to pronounce it, so I'm calling him Jesus all night. And I'm figuring, hey, with Jesus by my side, I got no problem back here. And then I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, should I flip the hamburger now? Should I leave it on the grill that much longer? What would Jesus do? And fortunately, he was right next to me, so I could ask him. And that's a plus. Everything was going great. And then the place shut down at 1 o'clock in the morning. We're talking Times Square, New York here. So your hamburgers are going till 1 o'clock in the morning. Actually, it could have been 2 in the morning. I really don't know. I know it was like really into the night. And the place closes down. And I take my apron off. And the boss comes in the back. He's in the front there with all the customers. And they close the door. And he comes in the back. He says, "Hey, where are you going, Ron?" So I'm going home, man. That was a good day. I'll see you tomorrow. And I said, no, wait a minute. Your shift isn't over. You're here till 4 in the morning. I said, what? Yeah, you're here till 4 in the morning. What am I going to do till 4 in the morning? The doors are closed. What are you talking about? Now it's time to clean the equipment and clean the grills.
What?
Yeah, I told you, you got to clean up at the end of the shift. Yeah, but I thought cleaning up was taking my apron off and washing my hands. That's not cleaning up. You gotta take everything apart. You gotta clean the grill. You gotta take the roast beef slicer. You gotta take the slicing unit off and wash that down with soap and water. And then you gotta clean the back wall on the grill. And you gotta clean the exhaust system.
Oh no! I thought I was a chef.
Yeah, you're a chef, and you clean up after your shift. What's the problem here?
Oh no.
For the next 2 hours, I it was the worst thing in my life. I might as well have just stuck my head in a toilet bowl with a brush, and it was just awful, awful. And the next day, I did it again, and handily, after the second shift, after the second day, I quit. I said I quit, and that was the end of my... I had a two-day Broadway Joe cook experience. The experience of a lifetime, quite obviously, didn't quite work out the way that I thought. Hey, kids, you have a wonderful day. I'm out of time here, or at least I've expended enough of it. I'll be back tomorrow. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.